Session number 10785.
Real one.
Come about your Myers, real one. How did you come to be in the Commandos, please?
Well, I was a regular officer in 1939-40, and I was in one of the high-numbered battalions of my regiment, and I had a feeling at that stage that I wouldn't see much of the war. And when Western Command asked for volunteers for a special service unit, I applied. And this was to enter number 10 commando, which at that stage was never formed. It was under the command of Colonel DeVoe of the Grenadier Guards, who, as it so happened, had been my adjutant. And so I was accepted, but never called up to for number 10 because it was never formed. The battalion that I was with then moved down to the Portsmouth area, and I'd only just arrived when I was told to report to number, I think it was then called 3 Special Service Battalion at Girvan, to Colonel Lister. I was to report to Colonel Lister. I reported there, this was November 1940, and was told that there was no vacancy in what had been number 7 commando, but I was to come to Troon to join number 4 commando. Not long after joining, I mean a couple of weeks, we were put aboard, the whole brigade was then going to attack the island of Pantelleria in the Mediterranean. And number 4 went aboard the Glen Gyle, I think it was. But, and here, this is only hearsay, I'm told that the Germans had changed the garrison on Pantelleria from Italian to German, and it was thought that we wouldn't have had a fair chance of capturing this island against a well-disciplined German force. Because of the shortage of shipping, we were all, the whole brigade was put ashore on the island of Arran. And then from this brigade, number 7 and I think number 11 commandos were then sent out to the Middle East and became part of lay force and fought in Crete and against the French in the Lebanon, in Syria and the Lebanon, it was from this lay force that the attack on Rommel's headquarters was mounted. I stayed on with number 4 commando. We moved back onto the mainland. And I was then sent on a number of courses up at Loch Islet on field craft and close combat. And at that time, I think the two outstanding characters up at Loch Islet were the two policemen from the Shanghai police.
Who were they?
Fairbairn and Sykes. And in fact, I'm told it's the FS knife that we were all issued with eventually was designed by Fairbairn and Sykes, hence the initials FS knife.
What was it like, this knife?
Well, it was double-edged, like a dagger. Like a dagger. And it was carried on the thigh.
Why were these two chaps such characters?
Well, they'd spent their lives in the Shanghai police, and what they didn't know about close combat fighting, there was very little left that they didn't know. They were extremely good. First of all, they were extremely good with their revolvers, which at that stage none of us were any good at all. They could throw up a tin can and shoot it. And also for they had learnt what is now probably called karate. And so all these, the side of close combat thing, they were passing on to us.
Were they characters?
They were elderly men, gentlemen. I remember the first night we sat in this Nissen hut wondering next morning who would be teaching the different subjects of close combat and fieldcraft, map reading. And the two elderly gentlemen with rather thick glasses we had put down to being on the administrative staff. And we were surprised next morning when these were the two that taught us what we eventually learnt about close combat fighting.
You were telling me about Vaughan as one of the most important people there.
Well, Vaughan wasn't there at that stage. Vaughan came to 4 Commander, actually. Well, he came to 7 Commander because he was Colonel Lister's quartermaster in the Buffs. And Colonel Lister brought him to 7 Commander, and then when Colonel Lister didn't go out to the Middle East with 7 Commander and came to Command 4, Colonel, or Major Vaughan as he then was, came as our administrative officer. He stayed with us, I would say, a year. And then when we were forming this training establishment, a proper training establishment for commanders only, up at Achnacarry, in the family house of Cameron of Lochiel, Major Vaughan then went up to Achnacarry as the commandant. Because at that time, Colonel Vaughan was really beyond the age of very active soldiering. And he had come in an administrative capacity and then went on to be a very successful commandant at Achnacarry. He had been a sergeant major in the Coldstream Guards. His discipline was excellent. His carriage was excellent. He had a great sense of humor. And for us young men, he taught us a lot of what the good regular army soldier had to offer.
What was his Christian name?
Charles.
Can you tell me more about the training you participated in yourself?
Well, I went up to Loch Islet, where I did, as I have said, close combat and what would you call it today? Survival courses, really, in the mountains around Loch Islet. That was one of the courses I went on. Then I was sent down to London to a bombed area which was used for street fighting. This was very instructive again, because really here you could use grenades, and you could, because the whole area had been evacuated. It was near Battersea Power Station, I seem to remember. And we were given some extra skills, I think. One was how to drive a steam engine, and the other was how to destroy a big power station. We were shown exactly where we could and should lay the explosives.
What was the first actual operation you were on?
First operation number 4 Commando did was the 4th of March 1941, when we went on the Emma, that was one of the Harwich Hook of Holland boats, to Lofoten. At that stage, Britain didn't have long-distance fighters, and so we had to go right up into the Arctic Circle and then down into the Lofoten Isles, because we were well beyond the range of fighter protection. And we were extremely lucky, I think. We went up the Firth early morning on the 4th, bitterly cold, bitterly clear morning, with the snow-covered mountains up 80 miles of the Firth till we got to our landing point, which was Schwalwehr. The landing at that stage was unopposed. It was the very first one we had done. I can remember to start with, we were walking around the decks on the Emma in our rubber-soled shoes, trying to be as quiet as possible. Well, the first officer was shouting in loud naval terminology to the crews of the landing craft as to when they were to lower their thing and what they were to do with their with the soldiers that they had aboard. And we were doing our best to quieten him, because this sounded to us as if it was reverberating round all the hills. We had a run-in of about, I think, a mile, I think. It was so cold that the spray coming up and hitting our steel helmets, which we were wearing in those days, though later on we wore green berets, froze and formed icicles around our green berets. We climbed up onto the pier, I can remember, by using wooden bamboo ladders. And thanks to the fact that at that stage there was no opposition, we got ashore. My own particular job when we were ashore was the colonel sent for me and told me to take my section to destroy some of the shipping that was lying out in the outer bays around the island, around the port of Schwalwehr. And I remember the first one I went to was just a small fishing smack, I think, and we pulled alongside, and I went aboard with the explosives, went down into the engine room, placed the explosives, came up with my team, got back onto the LCA, and the naval engine room man had switched off the engine. And here this fuse was burning away, and he couldn't get his engine started. So this gave us a few moments of alarm as we tried to use the boat hook to push ourselves away from the fishing smack. However, all was well. The engine spurted into life and we sped away. The next job was much bigger, and that was the Bremen was lying in these waters. Now, this was a German passenger boat, and we climbed up the side, and under cover of our Brens, we got aboard and made for the bridge to capture the logs, etc. The crew had mainly actually gone, had evacuated when they saw us coming round the corner. And so we really didn't have a great deal of fighting. We either captured them or some of them got into dinghies and made for the shore. I then returned to Schwalver itself and reported to the colonel. It was almost a training exercise, I think, Lofoten. It was good in that we learnt our mistakes without having too many casualties.
What particular mistakes did you learn?
Well, that we were going up a pier using bamboo instead of, and all using pretty well the same narrow entrance instead of attacking the area on a much wider front. I mean, had there been even one machine gun so placed, they could have prevented us from getting up onto the pier. Once we were on the pier, then we had the warehouses and things like that. It was the major party or the major objective of the big party had to, of course, destroy all the oil tankers. And this was amusing in that everywhere there were signs about, in all the languages, about no smoking. French, Norwegian, German, and English, of course. And do you think we could get these? They were tanks like rather like a gasometer in shape and size. And of course, every time we threw a fire grenade in, it just went out. Until somebody had the bright idea of making a big hole in the side of them and letting the oil actually drain away like a stream, and then getting the stream to light, and then the stream lit the tank. So when we left, of course, they were all burning. It was a tremendous sight as we pulled away in the destroyer from Schwalver, the whole of that area. There was on the amusing side, I can remember one incident where after we had done our tasks, completed our tasks, we rounded up not only what was left of the German garrison, but also some of the Quislings. And an enthusiastic commando boy went around asking some of the Norwegians if they were Quislings. "No," said this young man, "I'm not a Quisling, I'm anti-Quisling." "Well, I don't care a damn what sort of Quisling you are, you're coming home with us." And so we got the town's, what should I call him, a boy of little intelligence. We brought him home, and I'm told he stayed with the Norwegian forces as a potato peeler for the remainder of the war.
What was the general attitude of the Norwegian civilians towards you?
Actually, considering we were going to be there and then leave, they were extremely good. We took off with us, came back with us, any able-bodied man who wanted to come and fight in the Norwegian forces.
Was everyone elated then after this raid?
Well, we came back because it was the first really successful raid, and the press made a lot of it. It was really to raise the morale of the British people at that stage, because this was evidence, anyway, that we were able to strike back at the Germans across quite a wide stretch of the North Sea.
Were there any other raids you took part in before the Dieppe raid?
No, Four Commando did one, but it was only done by two troops, and that was Colonel Lovett, and he took half my troop, and therefore I didn't go, because I remained with the rest of my troop. I remained here on the mainland, and half my troop with half another troop went across with Colonel Lister.
Did your troop have a letter or a number?
Yes, my troop was A.
Can you tell me now about the Dieppe raid as you took part in it in detail?
Well, we did a lot of training down in the Weymouth area. We went down to Weymouth from here, and by this time the Lord Lovett was our commanding officer, a very good soldier, a great leader, and we went down to Weymouth. We found an area similar to the area across in the Dieppe, to the Dieppe landings, that's cliff. And we were landing in two parties, one right up against the cliff, which was commanded by Major Mills Roberts, and the other part was commanded by Lord Lovett. Now, I was under Major Lord Lovett. There was C Troop and half of A Troop. And C Troop had to form the bridgehead for the withdrawal, and A Troop had to get up through this perimeter, knock out the observation post and lighthouse, and go on to the perimeter of the battery and support the main attack, which was then coming round from the back, because Colonel Lovett's party landed on a sandy beach, crossed it, and then went round a journey of about 2 miles, I would think, and came in from from inland to attack the battery. We were extremely successful. We were lucky in that, unlike Three Commando, we didn't meet a group of E-boats as we were going in. The cliffs were quite high where we were, and so we got in before the Germans were really awake, and by the time we had got under the cliff, they couldn't depress their guns down onto us. Difficulty was getting up these very narrow what would you call them, chimneys, which were filled with barbed wire and mines, and we had to destroy the barbed wire by using Bangalore torpedoes, and that's, they set off the mines as well, and so we were able to, I wouldn't call it climbing, but we had to scamper up through this till we got to the top. C Troop then formed the perimeter, and I went round, dropped off a Lieutenant Nivet Carr to destroy, with a small group, to destroy the lighthouse, and went on to the perimeter. This is where my group met with casualties, in that my sergeant major was very badly hurt. He was shot through the shoulder, and my mortar man was shot through the shoulder, and we lost some other men. One part of my troop had landed with Lord Lovett and was then instructed to come back along the beach and meet up with me to form an outpost to the west of the battery to prevent reinforcements from coming into the battery. Unfortunately, they had quite a lot of casualties in rejoining me, so they didn't rejoin me till we actually had got back onto the beach. So I had to deplete my force slightly and send a group out to this crossroads to prevent reinforcements from being brought in, either by truck or even on foot. We didn't really have any trouble with the Germans, other than the snipers that, from whom we received casualties as going when we were on our way to the perimeter fences of the battery. But the group that went out back to the crossroads, they met a Frenchman who was ferrying his eggs into the market in the morning, and poor chap fell over, and I'm sure he lost most of his eggs.
With these commando raids, people always raise this question of taking prisoners. What are your own opinions about it?
Well, as far as we were always concerned, we always took if there was a prisoner, we took a prisoner.
But what about the problem of places available in the boats to take them back?
Well, we were never faced with that problem, so I really can't answer that. We always had plenty of room wherever. We didn't have that number of prisoners that we didn't have room on. The only place, and this comes, I'm going on to November 1944 when we attacked Walcheren. Here we had a lot of prisoners, but we were part of a much bigger force. So having kept them on the beach, we were then able to evacuate them through the normal channels.
The reason I raise it is because of Hitler's accusation after the Dieppe raid that the commanders were beyond the pale and criminals.
I have a feeling that the incident that had got to Hitler was the one, there was an attack, I believe, on one of the Channel Islands, where I think somebody had been killed, a prisoner had been killed, because they didn't either have the time or the space. But that is only hearsay. But I would think three commanders certainly couldn't have killed their thing, because only one boat landed and only one boat got off, so they couldn't have been guilty of that. The Royal Marine Commandos in the middle, that's 40 commando under Picton Phillips, I think his name was, couldn't have done it because they didn't land, and we were the only other commander on the extreme right, and certainly the prisoners we had taken in the battery were simply taken off without any problem as to where we would fit them in.
What about your escape from Dieppe? How did that go?
Went extremely well. The Air Force were marvellous. They kept coming in at very low level. In fact, the empties from their shells were falling on our heads. And they kept the heads down extremely well. And then, of course, we were completely successful in the Lord Lovett's party got into the battery and destroyed all the guns. And we then came through a defended area because Sea Troop had formed a large perimeter, and we came down through them onto the beach. Here, some of the German defenders from further down the coast